I got a green light. And I didn't touch it again. It's slow. Okay. All right. I'm the father of three daughters, as Stephen told you. And I know how to raise girls. I was made to raise little girls. I just have that personality that makes it easy for me to relate to girls. And when I was at Florida College, Stephen's incident's not the only one that sometimes left me with my hands up in the air saying, "What in the world were you thinking?" Most of the time the answer was, "We weren't." You know, for the guys. And Renee Anderson, who's a good friend of mine, real close friend, is the dorm supervisor for the boys' dorm at Florida College. Now they're all in one dorm. And we often joke, he said, if you were me, if you were in my shoes, there wouldn't be a boy left on campus alive. You'd have just slaughtered them all, killed them all, be done with it. But then God gave me grandsons. And I came to realize all over again what it means to be male. At first, it was really difficult for me. When I had two granddaughters first, and they were like my daughters were. When you put them at the table, if they spilled anything, they wiped it up. If they got anything on them, they were trying to brush it off. They were finicky and easy to work with. And then the grandsons came on. Six of them in a row. Just six in a row. And eating with my grandsons at the table when they were little was like eating with a blender with a lid off of it. I mean, I'd have food. I didn't even know where it came from. I could only identify it by the last meal. It would be all over me. And they grab at me, and I'd try to back away from them. But I came to appreciate in a whole new way what it means to be male, what it means to be a man. And those are really my credentials. I'm a preacher of the gospel, and I delve in the word regularly. And I'm a co-director of annual marriage retreats. I work with husbands and wives to try to help good marriages be better. I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a grandfather, and for 19 years I worked with college students. But I think more than any of those things, I'm a man. And I am so thankful God made me a man. And I don't mean by that. Thankfully made me a man as opposed to being a woman. But realizing that God has given us certain tools to do certain things that the females in the world cannot do. And it's interesting to be talking about that now after the Bruce Jenner to Caitlyn transformation that just occurred. I remember watching him when he was at the Olympics and the incredible prowess he had and the power that he displayed. And then to see him now becoming female in his own mind is such a disappointment because he is negating what God made him to be with powers God only gives to men. And I think our whole culture is attacking that and making it difficult for us to be the kind of men God wants us to be. So that what we end up finding are two extremes. One is the Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of man who's aggressive, in your face, fights all the time, pushes his way through with aggression, that's what it means to be a man. You know, go out and kill everyone and everything, that concept, versus the kind of the other, let's get in touch with our feminine side, and women really have some things together that we don't have, and they're so much more civilized. And I ask a group of young people, mixed group, do you think that our country would be more successful, less likely to engage in all the wars that we're engaged in, and would be a more civilized nation in the world plan if we had women in control? And a majority of the men and women, young men and young women in that audience said yes, believing that women in control would do a better job of facilitating relationships with each other. I'm telling you, I don't want to live in a world with that. I don't want to live in a world where women are in control, because they don't have the tools to do what we are called upon to do by God. And I don't want to get too far ahead of my point, but I want to begin by showing you what a difference we all have, even in this room, with what our roles are and what they ought to be. So I'm going to ask you a series of questions, and if it's man, if your answer is man, raise your right hand. If the answer is your wife, raise your left hand. And if you both are involved in it, raise both hands, okay? So here they are. The roles, who is responsible in your family for what I'll just call homeland security? Securing the house, the premises. Man, almost all. Woman, strong wives. Or both? Both, okay. Almost all of you did men. Now, the social calendar, hospitality, setting up for people to come over and doing things for others. Man? Woman? How many of us? Woman? Both. Now, look at that. I mean, look at, already we're seeing a divergence. Some are saying, oh, that's a woman's work. No, we both do that kind of thing. Spiritual welfare. You feel, who's the person who feels most responsible for the spiritual welfare of the whole family? Man? Woman? Both. How about grounds and property management? Man? Woman? Now, some of you will have, your women are really good at this kind of thing. And both? Both? You do both? Okay. Yard man. Or yard man. Financial management. Who's kind of responsible for taking care of the bills and those kinds of things? Man? Woman? Both. Really? That's interesting. The both, I'd like to know how you work that one out, you know. The emotional atmosphere in the home. Who sets the tone for that? Male? Female? Both. Okay. Y'all are starting to look like roller coaster riders. Like, woo, you know. And last one, long-range planning for the family's future. Who kind of looks ahead and sees where things are going to be in a few years and what you're going to be doing? Man? Woman? Both. Now, I dare say that in times past, some of those would have been clearly relegated as the man's job and others the woman's job, and very few of them both in the past. I think my grandfather and his generation would have been much clearer in delineating those duties than we have demonstrated here. And what you've done here is pretty typical when I ask that question. The financial responsibility, my mother never did. My dad did all that. This is his job. I mean, he would have said that. That's my job. In our household, I'm thankful Paula does that. I'm math challenged. And she does a much better job of taking care of that than I do. But trying to figure out what our roles are in this culture is harder than it was in previous cultures. It's a harder thing because, first of all, our culture is pushing us to a point at which we don't really perceive a lot of difference between male and female. I'm saying culturally now. I'm not talking necessarily about us in the spiritual realm of the Lord's body. But in our culture, that's happening over and over. That little boys are being pushed to develop more of their feminine side. Little girls are impinging on those areas where boys used to have exclusivity. You've got little girls now who are applying to be Boy Scouts. You've got them pushing to be involved in male sports. When I was in high school, no girl would have wrestled a guy in a wrestling match. But that happens now with more frequency. And I think it's part of our culture's attempt to say, there's not much difference between us. We're really very similar. And what we need to do is quit emphasizing the differences and emphasize our similarities. Genesis chapter 1, verses 27 and 28. If you'll take your Bibles and turn there, please. Genesis chapter 1. And we might would say, well, Ralph, this kind of looks that way. God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Now we might could say it might be better to translate that concept, not the words. The words are clear. But the concept is, in the image of God, or God created mankind in his own image. Humanity in his own image. Male and female, he created them in his image. And he blessed them. And he said to them, notice that now. Now they're being treated as equals. He blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply. That's a given. They can't do that independent of each other. But then he goes on to say, and fill the earth and subdue it. Subdue the earth. That's to both of them. It's not just to the man. And rule over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the sky, over every living thing that moves on the earth. That's to both of them. Both are created by God. Both reflect his image. Both are given shared responsibilities to tend the garden, replenish the earth, and rule over nature. That's male and female. They're both called to do that together. Now go to chapter 2 and look at verse 18. You know, in chapter 2 you come back because in chapter 1 it's just God created mankind or humanity in Adam and Eve. But in chapter 2, you come back and you look at it in a little more detail. Okay, let's slow-mo it and find out what God was trying to do. And that's where you see him creating man from the dust of the earth, shaping him and forming him, and then creating the woman later. And it says in verse 18, the Lord God said, it's not good for man to be alone. I'll make him a helper suitable for him. Now, I think in the past, some of us have thought that a demeaning role, a secondary role, that the woman has a second place. She's lower tiered. And partly because of that word, helper, or help. She's there to help him. So he has the primary role, and she's the assistant. She's kind of the gopher. I used to do that. I worked for my father in the summers. He had a sheet metal business. And I would always be sent out on the job as a helper. That's what I was. And I knew that being a helper meant I didn't give orders, and I just did what I was told to do. And that was what a helper was in that line of work. But you would be in error, and I would too, if we thought that's the meaning of this word. The old King James Version called it a help meet for him. Help meet, and we made that one word, but it really was a help suitable or equal to him. If you think that's a secondary role or some kind of lesser category because she was created after him, therefore he has a supremacy, and she was created from him, from his side, and that she was created to be a help to him, that means she's some kind of lesser being. You misunderstand the word because this is the same word in Hebrew that's used of God. God is a very present help in times of need. That word for help is exactly the word used of woman here. It's exactly the same word. So if you're thinking, well, it means she's the... I'll use an Alabama phrase. She responds when he rattles the ice in his tea glass. Need more tea. That's what it means to be a help. If you think that's what it means, you are demeaning not only her position, but the same word as it's used of God. So what does it mean when it says God is a very present help in times of need? I think it means he will supply what we are lacking. Man, when I understand it that way, when I start understanding it that way, it makes a whole different viewpoint I have of my wife and of my capabilities. It's like, if this is me, this is Paula, we dovetail. Where I'm not strong, she is. Where I'm not competent, she is. Now, that's not always going to be true. Sometimes there's a bit of overlap. And we're not even talking here about personalities in terms of one is outgoing and one is an introvert. One's talkative and the other's not. We're not talking about those kinds of things. We're talking about innate qualities that we have that are different. Now, they're going to be different to different degrees. And I want to say this as a caveat right up front. I'm going to say some things tonight that many of you as men are going to say, yep, that's me. And some of you are going to say, that's not true of me. I understand that. Because we're not all the same. I went to high school with Terry Bollé. He and I were classmates. You may not know Terry Bollé as Terry Bollé. You may know him as Hulk Hogan. Now, we're both men, but I've never had anybody say, I saw you the other day, I thought you were Hulk Hogan. Because he possesses some qualities of manhood I don't have. I'm not sure they're all naturally possessed, but he possesses some qualities I don't have. And I have some he doesn't have. So we're talking in some cases about degrees, but generally speaking, I think the Bible teaches us and nature shows us that we as men possess some qualities that women don't have, and they possess some qualities we don't have. And it goes beyond the fact that we can grow facial hair and they don't, and even that's not always true. I tried to grow a beard one time, and people were sending me to the doctor for mange because I had patches where it couldn't grow anything. Women can bear children, and men can't. But we're going beyond that. We're talking about qualities that are innate to us as men, and we possess them in different degrees, but we're different. And we should not demean, this is not meant to be a session where let's bash the women and build ourselves up. We're the best and they're not. We were created first and they weren't. Although I will tell you this, I think God is saying something by creating man first. I think by creating the male first, he is saying you have the firstborn relationship. You are my firstborn. You have that position of responsibility for the others who come after you. And I'm going to tell you, men, we have a responsibility to be what God has called us to be as men. And not to demean that, and not to dilute that, and not to disparage that, but to be the kind of men God called us to be. And we should be proud of that. And not arrogant, I don't mean arrogantly proud, but to be thankful to God that as he gave to our wives some skills we don't have, be thankful for that, that we are thankful for what we have. And that these two, if we become more like women, we don't dovetail. We don't work together. It does not work in those situations. So both man and woman are dependent on each other. She is to be the help for us, to fill the gaps for us. But I want you to also notice something. You remember, she is fulfilled in her counterpart role. Woman meets her ultimate role as a being of God when she is in a relationship to fulfill the counterpart relationship she has to man. And we sometimes talk about how barbaric it was that men thought of, or that people thought of women. Women thought the same way. They had no value unless they bore children. That in the Bible, if a woman didn't bear children, she was worthless. She wasn't useful at all. And while I think there was an extreme view of that culturally, I'm going to tell you, women were made to bear children. As a rule, they were made to bear children. And they find their great fulfillment in that. We've got women in our congregation who have no children, and they're finding their roles. But listen, I can make that same comment about the single life versus a married life. God's intent for most people is to be married, but even his own son wasn't married. So that's not meant to be, you're nothing if you're not doing this, but it's clear that was what God intended man and woman to be. He says that in the beginning. Be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth. And that's where we find our fulfillment. So when we live in a culture like ours is right now, telling us, women saying, I don't need a family, I don't need a man, I don't need children, she is negating the very purpose for which God made women. She's not going to find the ultimate fulfillment that she could have if she is choosing to ignore God's will for her in those things. And the same thing is true for us as men. Because I want to talk about some of those aspects that I think we men are reneging on. George Will wrote a great book called Gilder. George Gilder wrote a book called Men and Marriage, in which he said, man is a rogue until he marries. And then his marriage domesticates him and forces him to fulfill those roles and obligations that he was meant to fulfill. But prior to that, he's a rogue. And if you don't believe that, look at any given riotous scene that happens in America today. It's not 15-year-old girls or 60-year-old women or 50-year-old men who are out on the streets at any given time who are rioting. Who is it? It's young males, for the most part, who are, as Gilder puts it, rogues. That means they don't feel a responsibility to anybody yet. You know, I wouldn't do that because, well, first of all, I'd be afraid of getting hurt. But secondly, I'd say, I can't be arrested. I have a family to take care of. I have a job. See, there's that domestication that takes place for the man who is married. And that's the way I think God intended that to be. But man, I said, woman is fulfilled in that relationship because she is the help meet for man. But there's also the secondary statement about man. What is he called upon to do? For this cause, a man shall leave his father and mother and do what? Cleave or cling to his wife. Now, think about this. Why does he leave his father and mother? He leaves their oversight. He leaves their provisioning. He's now going to establish his own home. He is now going to make his own way in the world. He's no longer the child of these parents in terms of obedience and authority. He's on his own way from that. But then it says he will what? As he leaves the clinging relationship he had as a child to the parents, he will now cling to his wife. He will transfer some of that to his wife. I don't mean that he will obey her in the same way that he obeyed his parents, but that now he will find his satisfaction and his provision to be in his relationship with his wife. And that's why it's important, whether it's a physical thing, we moved 12 miles away from my parents, whether it's a physical thing or whether it's just a mental thing. I'm my own person, even though we're living at a house right next door or still living on the property, it is important for a man to move away from that relationship so that he can be the kind of person that God intended him to be. But the cultural view of man now is very different. Ask our culture, define a man, what are males in our culture? And they'll say, well, they're sexual predators, they're social misfits. They will point to incidents like Columbine. You don't see girls doing that. You don't see girls going out there just shooting people randomly. You don't see girls rioting in the streets. No, they're so much more civilized. Young men are that. They're awkward. They're not conversive. You know, my best friend, with whom I do those marriage retreats, our wives and Mark and Judy and Paula and I, He had three sons. Still has three sons. They've survived. I sometimes wonder how, but they have. We would get together, and Mark recites this story more than I do, but Mark would say, you know, we listened to Ralph's girls, and they talk. I mean, they would talk and talk and talk and talk. And, I mean, that's conversation that our table was just effusive. People would come to our house and sit and listen to the girls all conversing and the conversation going back and forth like 12 ping pong balls being bounced around on a table at one time, and we're handling it all. And some people were impressed by that, and Mark was put off by that. Can we stop and just eat? And his thinking was, you know, listen to the girls. When they get in a fight in another room, it's all verbal and high-pitched squeals and screams like porpoise is dying or something. But then his boys would come in the house, and it was like the OK Corral all over again, because they'd come through the doors, and here are the three Broyles boys. And they're all over the house, and we're getting constant reports, this broke. You know, what happened? It broke? Really? I mean, like you were watching it on the ground and it just broke? It broke, you know. And fighting all the time. You know, they're all the time wrestling and rolling around in the house. We had a summer training program when I was in Concord, North Carolina. I had a couple of guys that would come every summer and be with us. And we had a couple of guys that came one summer. And one of the first things they did was come over to the house. And my girls were there. They were very young at that time. And these boys are coming over there. And all of a sudden, one of them says to me, hey, let's wrestle. I thought he meant the other guy. He meant me. I'm a grown man now. I have children. I have responsibilities. I can't break arms or legs unless it's somebody else's. And I wasn't likely to do that with them. But let's wrestle. Guys do that. You know, boys do that. There's an aggressiveness about them that is different than girls. Very different. But our culture says, oh, the girls are good, the boys are bad. And the boys are, they're social misfits. They are aggressive, they're dolts, they're animals. Or this quote, they are human machines which operate on the principle of perpetual commotion. You know, I found that to be true of my grandsons. The little girls go play. The little boys bang things. I mean, even when they were really small, they would sit in a high chair, and where the little girls would be picking at stuff and picking it up and eating it, I watched them. Look how civilized they are. My grandsons would grab things and just, it didn't matter what it was. It could be a salt shaker, it could be a knife, it could be a fork, it could be a cup. They would bang it, just bang it, bang it, bang it on the tray or on the table. And every time they banged it, they winced like, ooh, what was that? I'm thinking, you did it. You don't understand the connection. You caused that to happen. But boys are like that. They're perpetual commotion. And they take things apart. Little girls don't do that. Some of the things that it broke, wasn't broken. It was pried open because the boy wanted to see what was in it. God made us that way, men. God made us that way. I'm going to talk to you about why I think that is true. But that is a male versus female difference. And rather than disparage it and say, the boys are barbarians, they don't know how to behave, they don't know how to take care of things, we need to understand that's all part of what we are as males. And now you young men are saying, I'll keep talking about this because I wrecked the car today, you know, and I got to tell my dad, oh, it's just being a man, that's all. But I think that it is part of what God has put in us. So our culture has now moved things in this direction. Girls now outnumber boys in student government, in honor societies, on school newspapers, and in debating clubs. Only in athletics are boys still ahead. And there are plenty of groups who have targeted that, the sports gap, with a vengeance. There's a book, and I'm not recommending you read it. This is really not worth reading. I did, and I'll never regain those hours of my life. But the title of the book intrigued me. The title of the book was The Athena Doctrine, how women and men who think like them will rule the future. The Athena Doctrine. How women and men who think like them will rule the future. And that is the very purpose of the book. That if we men will suppress those aspects of our lives, which really are like Neanderthals, and we will become more like women, the world will be a better place to live. I deny that. I deny that women are better rulers than men are. Because that's not what God said. A book that I just finished reading that I would recommend if you have sons that you read is The War Against Boys. How Misguided Feminism is Harming Our Young Men. It's written by Christina Hoff Summers. She's a fascinating writer, and she's written a number of books. I've read a couple of them, but this one perhaps is her best. Why The War Against Boys, How Misguided Feminism is Harming Our Young Men. Because we are suppressing those things. Well, let me tell you what the biblical view of man is. Males are different from females. We were never meant to be equals in every respect. A few years ago, Hasbro Toys made a toy they thought would be equally acceptable to both little boys and little girls. It was a playhouse with characters, male and female, and they thought, this one's going to be good. It'll be kind of androgynous. Both boys and girls will like it. And then they sat back and watched, in test cases, how little boys and little girls interacted with that playhouse. The little girls dressed up the figures, they kissed them, they fed them, and then they sat them down and played house with them. Brought in the boys. They catapulted the baby carriages off the rooftops and sent all the dolls to war. And one of Hasbro's managers explained it this way, quote, "Boys and girls are different." Yeah, they are. They are different. And while I'm not saying you should be concerned if you have a little boy who has a stuffed animal that he just loves to cuddle and play with, it is not typically true that little boys play with things the same way little girls play with them. Because they are developing those aspects of their lives God intended men and women to have. And it goes all the way back to pre-birth. When we're in the womb, the brains of little boys and little girls look very similar. And there is a bridge between the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere of the brain called the corpus callosum. And it is a bridge between the two so that you think with both sides of the brain connected. And we know this now because they can put heat sensors on the head and give people tasks to do and watch where they light up. Because where they're hot is what part of their brain they're using. So they'll give tasks to women. And the women, because that bridge is connecting the two lobes of the brain, will think with both sides, both the logical side and the emotional side, at the same time. They're receiving input from both sides because that bridge is there. And we've seen that. We can see the brain lighting up on both sides for the women when they solve problems or when they encounter circumstances or situations. In the womb, all babies have a strong corpus callosum. But just before birth, baby boys in the womb get a testosterone wash over the brain. And it actually deteriorates large portions of that bridge. And then they start thinking, boys think this way. They think, first of all, with the logical side of their brain, their left brain, and then their thinking moves across what is left of that bridge to the emotional side of their brain, and it lights up on that side. You and I cannot even imagine how women think. We cannot, and you know that's true, because women don't think like we think. And we know that by conversations. It is, if you want to see an example of that kind of thing, although I haven't seen the movie yet, and it may end up being one that portrays all men as dolts, but the movie that comes out tonight, Inside Out, where males and females have the different parts of their brain all interactive with each other, and you watch the difference in how the woman acts and how the man acts, you can see some of that difference. But my wife and I have conversations I'm just hoping I can keep up with. She'll ask me something, and then in a minute she'll bring up something else, and it comes from a conversation she had 5 minutes ago. And if she would only give me names, I could understand who it is, but she'll just give me a he. And he was telling me about, and I'm thinking, which he? I don't know if this goes back 2 minutes, 5 minutes, or an hour ago. Her brain thinks so differently than mine does. But I'm going to tell you something, guys. That is so valuable. Because you've had your wives, or your women, if you're not married, you've heard women say things like, I just have a feeling about them. It's because they're thinking, and you and I will say about that, well, that doesn't make sense. Paula has said to me before, I don't have a good feeling about that guy. I say, why wouldn't you? He was dressed nicely. I'm thinking logically. He had good conversational skills. He looked me in the eye. He was, what he told me, I think, was the truth. I kind of sensed that. I could verify a lot of it. I'm thinking logically. I'm thinking left brain. She is getting it from both sides of her brain at one time. And she's got a feeling about that. And invariably, she's right. Invariably, she is right. That doesn't mean women are always right and men are always wrong. That's not the case, because when my wife sometimes thinks with both sides of her brain, she's too emotionally controlled and she doesn't come up with a good answer. I'm going to tell you an incident that just happened just 2 days ago, and I'm thinking most of you men will say, well, of course, but some of you may not. It was a man and his wife, and they were telling us about their children playing around a pool they have in their backyard, and the pool doesn't have a fence. And Paula and I were at the table with them. And Paula said, because she's terrified with the grandchildren, and there are a lot of drowning deaths in the state of Florida. Paula said, how do you keep them out of the pool? And he said, you know, they have to learn a healthy fear of that. For example, our youngest daughter, who can't swim yet, was playing around the edge of the pool. And she was there playing, and my wife, Becky, said, we better go out there and get her. She's going to fall in the pool. And he said, let her fall. I'll watch her. Let her fall. And she fell in the pool. And Paula said, well, you grabbed her out right away, right? And he goes, no. No, I let her struggle a little bit. She wasn't down on the bottom. He said, I let her struggle a little bit. Then I reached in and pulled her out. And Paula was horrified. Horrified. I said, that makes sense. I did. That makes sense. Any of you brothers see that the same way I'm seeing it? Any of you see it? Yeah, that makes sense. Because then she's going to learn, oh, this is bad when I get there. If you keep pushing her away from it, she's probably inclined to go back to it. You know, Mark Twain said one time, I love his statement, although it's not true, but I love the way he said it. He said, the problem in the Garden of Eden was that God commanded them not to eat of the fruit. And the very command to not eat it is what prompted them to do that. That was the mistake. He should have told them not to eat the snake. You think? See, there's just a kind of a logic to me. Yeah, that makes sense, because she's going to be afraid. But if you just keep telling her, no, don't go near it, that's going to encourage her. There must be something good about that, like the fruit. I'm going to keep going. And then she may fall in when there's nobody there to watch her. That made sense to me. My wife was horrified by that. She said, I would never do that. And I thought, I could do that. Because the logical side of my brain says, I see the sense in that. As long as you're not letting them die or drown or hurt themselves, there's probably a good lesson in that. And men are different about that than women, because men think more logically than women. When I was a little boy, if I got hurt, I didn't go to my dad. I went to my mom. You know, if I went to my mom, she was so sympathetic. I mean, she's just all emotion about it. I'd go to her with a little splinter. You know, I'd say, oh, Mom, I got a splinter. Or in Florida, you get stickers, sand spurs. And I'd get one broken. I'd say, I got a sand spur. And my mother would immediately go into this sucking wind through her teeth mode. She'd go, ooh, I bet that hurts. I bet that hurts. I mean, she was so convincing it hurt worse after. Yeah, it does. Am I going to live? You know, and she was so, and she'd go, I got to get it out. Oh, I know this is going to hurt when I dig this out. I know it hurts. I loved all that sympathy. I didn't get that from my dad. He could assess the situation pretty well. He'd say, look, you're bleeding all over the carpet. Will you go to another room? Go bleed on the tile. It's easier to clean up. You know, he was kind of that kind of person. My dad was that way, but he was more logically oriented. And most of us as men, we think with a logical side first, and then we move to the emotional side second. That is verifiable physically. What I'm telling you is verifiable physically. And there's a great book called His Brain, Her Brain by two doctors, Larimore and Larimore. You want to read about all this and the difference it makes, read that book. His Brain, Her Brain. There are five characteristics of a male brain. And this came from a website that's totally non-religious at all. It said male brains are characterized by five things that female brains do not demonstrate to the same degree. Aggression, competition, self-assertion, self-confidence, and self-reliance. You're much more likely to hear a little boy say, I can do it by myself. I can do it by myself. Or to go off and try something by themselves than you are to see little girls do that kind of thing. Little boys have a self-confidence that oftentimes little girls don't demonstrate because they're looking for approval from their peer group. Boys don't necessarily look for it in the same way. It's not always good. Sometimes it's misfounded. Like a man that I knew, a friend of mine, and somebody said of him, he's not always right, but he's never in doubt. And I think that's probably true of a lot of us as men. We're just confident about those kinds of things. And I'll tell you where it shows up for me and my wife. It's my little helper when we're driving. She is constantly recommending that I go a different way than I'm going, or that I maybe watch out for this or that. And I get upset about that. And she will say, I wouldn't be bothered if you told me that. And I don't say it, but I want to say, well, of course not. You're a woman. You don't think that way I do. But for males, there is a sense of self-reliance and self-assertion and self-confidence that makes those kinds of things irritating to most of us. We're not always right, but we're rarely in doubt about those things. Now, let me tell you where that plays in, brothers, and I'm coming right to a close in a moment. God made us to be providers. In earlier societies, we were hunter-gatherers. We provided security for our family in terms of food, in terms of protection for the family, and in terms of guidance and leadership. If you have a leader, you want a person who thinks logically first and is not moved by emotional things except in a secondary sense. You don't want pure logic. I don't want Dr. Spock or Mr. Spock from Star Trek leading me, because he doesn't know what I'm going through. And that was often his conflicts with Captain Kirk. But I do want somebody who thinks logically first and tries to remove the emotional aspects of it to make a clear decision. God made us that way. He made us providers. He made us to be aggressive because there are times in a culture when men need to be aggressive. I know it doesn't happen as often for us in our culture here. I'm not sure that's good or bad. Because in some cases we're denying or not able to exercise those very things that God made us to be. But that is what God has called us to be. We are leaders in the family. We should be the leaders in the family. We were made to be leaders. And I don't think any of you can deny that's what the scriptures teach. That in the home, the man is the head of the house and the head of his wife, as Christ is the head of the church. You know, that's not a democratic situation, but that doesn't mean that we run roughshod over our wives any more than Christ runs roughshod over us. But that he also made us to be protectors and providers for our family. And we need to do that. And it is hard to do that. It is hard to do that in a culture in which those things are not thought of as great things. I mean, I don't feel the same way coming in from Winn-Dixie and putting bags on the counter and saying, there it is, we eat tonight. As I might have felt if I had to go out and kill a T-Rex and drag it back in and we're going to roast it, you know. Tonight we eat T-Rex steaks for everybody. You know, it's a different kind of culture that we're in. But nevertheless, we are still called upon to be the people willing to take the bullets for our family, willing to put ourselves on the line. A dog comes after our children. We don't say, I escaped. I don't know what happened to them. We provide that kind of protection. And our family needs to feel that. Our wives need to feel that. And let me just make one comment, tangential comment. Men, you need to protect your wives from the disrespect of your children. You don't let your children denigrate your wife. And you talk about her in that way. I didn't talk to my daughters about that. You won't talk that way to your mother. I said, you don't talk that way to my wife. You're not going to do that. And that's part of the protection that we provide for our women. That's what we're called upon to do. And that's a small part of it, but it's an essential part of it that the children understand. That's what my dad did. He was the buffer. He was the protector. I was that way with my daughters. You know, guys that wanted to date my daughters had to go through a pretty grueling exercise to get to them. And I said from the very beginning, no man comes to my daughter except through me. And I thought that was my role. I do. I still think that was my role. That was my responsibility as a father of children. Okay, now here's my last point and we're done. On October 16th, 1555, Hugh Latimer and Nicholas Ridley were burned at the stake for supporting the Protestant movement in England. As they were tied to the stakes and the torches were lit, and the fires began to climb up on those mounds, Latimer turned to Ridley and said this, "Be of good comfort, Master Ridley, and play the man. We shall this day light such a candle by God's grace in England as I trust shall never be put out." I get goosebumps when I think about the courage to say that just before you're burned to death. But what struck me about that statement is this statement, play the man. Because that very phrase is found in the King James Version of the Bible, which was printed some 60 years after this. In 2 Samuel chapter 10, verse 12, and if you don't have a King James Version, it won't read this way, but here's how it reads, "Be of good courage. And let us play the men for our people and for the cities of our God, and the Lord do that which seemeth him good." The New American Standard Version has, instead of play the man or play the men, show ourselves courageous. But this idea of playing the man, in 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 13, my last passage, 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 13. The Apostle Paul said, "Be on the alert. Stand firm in the faith. Act like men." Now, that word is not "act like humans." That is the word for man. It is, and the term itself means to behave like a man, to play the man. That's the phrase. When he says here, "act like men," he's really using a variation of that very concept. Play the man. Play your part. Do what you're supposed to do. We are men. God made us different than those women. And the difference ought to be obvious in us. Not because we're aggressive and cruel and we're harsh and we're judgmental and we're arrogant, but that we understand our roles as leaders. And we understand our roles to be courageous, to make hard decisions for our families, but to be men, to watch the dangers we face. Women naturally gravitate to each other and they ask questions of each other all the time. They're always looking for approval from each other. Men aren't always good about doing that. I taught a class recently about Jonathan and his relationship with David. And I said to the class, I said, if a man has one friend in life like David had in Jonathan, if you go to your grave with one man in your life that you could give your entire life to because he means that much to you as a friend. If you have a friend that sticks closer than a brother, you, my brother, are richly blessed. Don't ignore the necessity of having a Jonathan or a Joab or a Barnabas in your life. Find a man who understands what it means to be a man. And then, brothers, play the man. Be what God intended you to be.